podcast has been organized by the Low Residency MFA in Creative Writing Program at Dominican University of California, under the direction of Dr. Judy Halebski, in collaboration with the Communication and Media Studies Department and Penguin Radio.
And this fantastic series of events, and I have to say yes to being recorded. I'm just thrilled and honored, and I hope that I have something valuable to share with you today in talking about autofiction, something that you can use in your reading and writing lives. That's my goal. I've got so much to say. This is one of those where I could just talk for hours. This is a topic that is near and dear to my heart. The handout, I just want to make sure you see the handout, which I'm not going to be sharing it visually because it goes into so much more detail. It's like an 8-page handout. It has a million quotes and all the links are live. And I really wanted you to have a ton of information so that you can pursue any part of this that you want to go deeper. But if I were to work through everything in there, this would take hours. So I'm going to just try to move along the top and give you the broad outlines of my thinking on this and other people's thinking on this. And just please know that there's so much more there in the handout for you to dive into. And also please don't have any anxiety about writing down people's names and dates and trying to track down all of this because it's all in there. So you can just listen and think about connections to your own work. And so I'm going to say as much as I can in 30 minutes, and then I want to have time for questions and discussion. And also I have some generative writing questions for you at the end relate to all of this. So we're talking about autofiction today, and you may have heard this word buzzing around. And it's simple yet really complicated to define. The simplest definition is that it's any writing that blurs the boundaries between autobiography and fiction, which helps but doesn't help. And so in all of these recent articles, I'll be referring to them on autofiction. They all refer back to Serge Dubrovsky, a French writer who coined the term autofiction in 1977 to describe his own novel. That novel has not been translated into English. I don't speak French. I haven't read it. I don't think any of his work has, but this is a quote about when he's talking about why he used that term autofiction. Autobiography? No, that is a privilege reserved for the important people of this world at the end of their lives in a refined style. Fiction of events and facts strictly real. Autofiction, if you will. To have entrusted the language of an adventure to the adventure of language. Outside of the wisdom and the syntax of the novel, traditional or new. Interactions, threads of words, alliterations, assonances, dissonances, writing before or after literature, concrete, as we say, music. Do you feel more confused or less confused? I feel both. So you'll find many more definitions, but what I've done is read through a million definitions and there's an undergraduate thesis by Sarah Pitcher McDonough that I want to really credit her because a whole bunch of these definitions and their translations come from this undergraduate thesis, which is very good. It's online and you can find it there in the handout. But I've gone through all of those to pull out for you the recurring themes that are in all of these different definitions and discussions. And so these are all characteristics of autofiction. It's about a regular person, not a famous person or a person recounting their historic accomplishments. It unites the author, the narrator, and the protagonist. They're the same person, but they usually have the same name and the same biography. It explores questions about its own genre, its realness, its truthfulness. So in its content and in its language, it's trying to engage with those questions. Creates its own language conventions, transcends syntax, invents its own form. It messes with truth, like I'm fictionalizing to tell the truth, or I'm using real life as a setting for fiction. A big thing that comes up over and over is that it breaks the pact with the reader. So if you're reading an autobiography, there's some sort of unwritten pact that the author is sincere and really trying to tell you what happened, and these words can be trusted, and these things really happened, and I'm not going to lie to you. And if you're reading fiction, there's a convention like this is made up. If there are real people, they're disguised, their names are changed. If it's historical fiction, we've changed things, right? So there's this sort of unwritten pact, and the idea of autofiction is that it breaks that pact. And I think the most important part of that pact is that you're supposed to know as the reader which is which. You're supposed to know what's fiction and what's nonfiction, and autofiction explicitly breaks that pact so that you don't always know. It usually calls itself a novel or some form of fiction, often crossed with another genre. It messes with time, like challenging the boundaries between past, present, future. It jumps around, it splinters. It tries to stick to real events and facts and tell the real truth, but that's complicated, and it problematizes the relationship between writing and experience. It attempts to actively engage the reader with the writer, and it points to the reader's relationship with the text. It challenges the reader to examine our own expectations of form, language, genre, and authorship. It narrates the writer or artist's becoming a writer or an artist. And the fancy German word for that is Künstlerroman, which is part of Bildungsroman, I guess. And the work is kind of about its own creation. It's like a book that where you're part of what's being written about is the writing of that book. And it's often prose written by poets or engages with poetry or engages with visual art. It blurs the lines between these different genres that we've created within literature and art. So all of that, those are just the pullouts of sort of everything that autofiction is doing. And so in this current spate of articles and discussion of autofiction, there's a group of writers who are almost always mentioned. They are Sheila Hedy for How Should a Person Be in Motherhood, Ben Lerner for the Topeka School in 1004, Jenny Offill for Department of Speculation and Weather, Rachel Cusp for the Outline Trilogy, Tao Lin for Taipei, Teju Cole for Open City, and Carl Owen Nausgaard for My Struggle. There's a lot of potential in this genre and also a lot of problems, deep problems in this genre. A couple of really notable things are that this is a mostly white list, and the only two writers of color who are generally mentioned in that list are Teju Cole and Tao Lin. And also that there's this huge skip from 1977 when the term was coined by this French writer, Serge Dubrovsky, to like 2009, 2010. All of those books I just mentioned are from that. So the questions that drew me are, did these writers just invent this genre out of nothing? Or are there antecedents to this? And also, why does the story skip from 1977 to 2010? That's a big skip. And also, where are all the other writers of color, particularly women of color? So what I want to do is explode that list and explode the definition and present to you an alternate timeline of autofiction that I find much more compelling and exciting. And you will see a little translated blurb from Serge Dubrovsky's book in the document. So I want to go through this alternative timeline. And these are classics of American literature. These are not deep cuts. These are not like my personal discoveries. They are seminal, foundational American classics, but they're not usually mentioned in discussions of autofiction, which, as I will argue, makes no sense because they should be. So in 1976, which is right around the time of the Serge Dubrovsky novel, Maxine Hong Kingston published The Woman Warrior, Memoirs of a Girlhood Among Ghosts. And for this whole timeline, I'm going to give basically, if we go back to that list of qualities and characteristics of autofiction that I mentioned, these books have every single one of these qualities and characteristics. So Woman Warrior, there are two whole sections that engage with No Name Woman, engages with questions of naming and what can't be named, what can't be translated into language, which stories can't be told, how does that get taken up into narrative or not. There's a section called At the Western Palace, and it is mostly an autobiography told from the first person, not usually going into the third person, but there is a whole section where that's told in the third person where two characters in the book, the mom and the aunt, become a Brave Orchid and Moon Orchid, and it's a third person section, and they it explicitly engages with all of those questions that I just mentioned on that list. In 1981, Leslie Marmon Silko, storyteller that uses autobiographical stories, family stories, town stories, Hopi stories, Laguna stories. Characters are both named and unnamed. Their names can change. It uses first and third person, poetry and prose, stories and photographs. There's a section called Tony's Story, which is about racialized police violence and absolutely is something that we should be reading and talking about in 2021 as we're talking about racialized police violence. Again, every characteristic on that list. This Bridge Called My Back, radical writings by radical women of color came out in 1981. The whole anthology explicitly engages with so many of these questions and narrative techniques. And then 1982, Audre Lorde, Zombie, A New Spelling of My Name. I want to read a quote where she talks about why she calls it a biomythography. Zombie is not only an autobiography, but mythology, psychology, all the ways in which I think we can see our environment. And this is what I think good fiction does, and it is fiction. I attempt to create a piece of art, not merely a retelling of things that happened to me and to other women with whom I shared close ties. I define it as a biomythography because I found no other word to really coin what I was trying to do. So this word biomythography could be taken up by other writers and used in relationship to autofiction, but it hasn't been. It has been generally related to Audre Lorde, and I haven't heard seen a lot of connections to zombie or to biomythography in these discussions of autofiction. So I have a lot more about zombie. And then finally on this alternative timeline, just coming through the 80s is Gloria Anzaldúa, 1987, Borderlands La Frontera. And the specific section that really engages all of these questions, even though the whole book does, is How to Tame a Wild Tongue. So this is, again, just the top list. There are so, so many more books. And these are, you know, seminal, foundational works of American literature that are meeting every criterion for autofiction, but are not being discussed in relationship to autofiction. That seems suspicious to me. There's something happening where in the reading and the reception and the criticism of these works, the fact that the writers are women of color makes the whole conversation about identity and power and lived experience and somehow erases the whole discussion of narrative, technique, craft, genre, language choices, and the intentionality of those writers and the choices that they're making in relation to language and genre and craft and narrative. In the handout are so many different articles about how this happens and why this happens, about the way that there's an article called Can a Black Novelist Write Autofiction? And here's a quote from it. This is Toby Fullerin. When a critic invokes the phrase autofiction, they are essentially arguing that a writer is helping to create a new kind of literature. The phrase autobiographical fiction, on the other hand, denotes a book that could very well be artful, but is drawing on a tradition that isn't new at all. So there's a way that autofiction is being presented as something new that's different from autobiographical fiction, even though there are these strong connections that are going all the way through these books and are being engaged in autofiction. So what I want to argue is that when that we have questions of identity and lived experience and power, and then we have questions of genre and craft and narrative, and that part of what happens in the literary landscape is that these questions are dealt with separately as though they're not related. And that when writers are explicitly engaging with gender, with race, with power, that the conversation and the reading becomes about questions of power and identity, and that the discussion of genre and narrative and craft can be subsumed under that. Whereas a writer with dominant identities, the whole interview, the whole discussion can be about their technique and their craft and their narrative. And autofiction can be discussed in those terms. And the in a way that that doesn't happen for writers of color who are constantly being asked to return to questions of power and identity. And there are so many stories about publishers asking writers of color to do that. There's a woman named Marsha Aldrich who she made an anthology called Waveform, which was, she was just trying to put together an anthology of essays by women. And she said, this is a quote from her about why that it was so hard to sell and market that book. "I wanted to depart from a thematic or subject-driven approach and instead highlight the way writers interact with subject through elements such as style, voice, tone, and structure, and allow the subjects to fall where they fall. When I began working on Waveform, I thought the project would be commercially viable because of the roster of writers and the recent attention to the rise of female essayists. However, the responses I received from commercial presses, while phrased slightly differently, were all concerned about the marketability of such a book. The absence of a thematic hook, namely women's experiences, made the book not readily marketable. It didn't have a take on being a woman other than being essays written by women essayists. Treating the women writers as writers and focusing on the diversity of narrative approaches was viewed as a hindrance to sales rather than a strength." So I just want to highlight the way that these issues are all coming together in the way that where writers are being published, read, received, discussed, interviewed on all the levels. Coming back to the alternative timeline, in the 90s, Chris Krauss, the author of I Love Dick, edited a series called the Native Agent series, which was explicitly women writers writing first person narratives that were engaging with a lot of these issues in autofiction and aren't necessarily always discussed in relation to that. And coming into what brought me to all of this work, I, as a writer, so sometimes you you discover, you find your way to writing, you read the books and it brings you to something. What happened to me was that in my own writing, I was struggling so much with these very questions of how do I make all of these different elements work together in my writing? There are stories that I can tell fictionally, there are stories that I can tell non-fictionally. How do all the different parts of myself and my experience fit into my voice? How do my privileged and dominant identities affect my voice and my storytelling? How do my marginalized identities affect my voice and my storytelling? How do those things work together? And have found that a very challenging question every time I come to the page. And that's what led me to search and search until I found all of these authors who engage with these questions in their writing as models for how to do that. And I want to give you some more books that have been super helpful to me and that I want to add to the alternative timeline that are not always mentioned in relation to some of these conversations. And if I have time, I'll come back to I Love Dick. This is a person, a writer who's never mentioned in relation to autofiction, but absolutely ought to be, which is Linda Barry, the cartoonist. And I've got a quote in the handout, but she basically starts this book 100 Demons by saying, "This is a work of autobifictionalography," which is a word that is connected to biomythography and autofiction, right? And then the very first page is, can you, Is it autobiography if parts of it are not true? Is it fiction if parts of it are? That really is the question that is at the heart of autofiction. And she's always talked about as a writer and as an author and a cartoonist and not as an author, excuse me. But her narrative structures are incredible. The jumping between timelines, the language of childhood, so much craft, just like all of those books I mentioned in the alternative timeline from the 80s, just such deep craft and such strong control of narrative in all of those books and in Linda Berry that is really helpful to look at as an example. And I also wanted to mention, and she also, her book, What It is explicitly about memory, imagination, language, and imagery, how to work together with those, and has fantastic writing exercises. And then Eileen Miles is sometimes talked about in these discussions, but not always. And Inferno from 2010 is absolutely perfectly an autofictional novel. It's called a poet's novel, and it moves between first and third person. It moves around in time. It does everything that's on that list, and also as it goes, telling their story of becoming a poet, sort of teaches the reader, here's how I learned to write poetry. Here's how you do it, which is, I found extremely helpful. And for poets writing prose, it's fantastic. And then I want to talk finally about Calamities by Renee Gladman from 2016, which is such a fascinating book and engages with all of the questions of narrative and genre and form and language and moving between drawing and writing, the line moving in and out of the page, and what is the self. There's a character named Renee, and then there's also an I. Every essay begins with, I began the day. Daily life things are happening. There's kind of no bigger story, but except the bigger story of the greatest, biggest story of living as a human in the world in a body and moving in and out of art. So what happened to me is that in trying to engage with these questions in my own writing, I came to I Love Dick and Calamities and those two Linda Berry books and Inferno, and found in them examples that taught me how to the way I wanted to engage with these questions in my own writing. And the book that I'm writing is about those books. It's about those writers. I just recently learned the term bibliomemoir. Didn't know it existed, but there in the handout, there's a whole thing about auto theory and about new narrative. There are just links and lists and about bibliomemoir, which are related terms. And again, they mean all of this, you know, but could be helpful for thinking about your genres and your forms in your writing. The argument I hope to have made by just at the top, even though each part of it we could go into for a really long time, is I think that autofiction itself, redefined to include all of these really important and influential authors who I think made autofiction possible. I don't think that the form in itself is mostly white or is exclusive in itself. I think it's being defined and discussed and thought about in very exclusionary ways, but I think that if the genre is expanded to include these writers who I believe made it possible, then there's a lot more room within this genre for it to be more interesting and engaging. I actually see, even though it's not yet being discussed in this way enough, I see it as, because it engages with all of those questions, I think autofiction is a great place to use questions of identity and power to explore questions of language and form, and a great place to use questions of language and form, genre and narrative, to explore questions of identity and power. It's like a bridge that moves between those and helps to reveal the connections between them. So I think it actually is a wonderful form for exploring intersectional identities and questions and writings. If we can rescue it from some of these forms of racism and sexism, et cetera, that have constrained the way that a lot of people are thinking and talking about it. So, end of lecture.
Thanks so much, Alexa. So much material and so much to think about of the way, you know, from the process of writing to the way work lives in the world and how we categorize it and value it. Do we have questions for Alexa? Alexa, could you start? How did you start? Do we have a pressing question? I have one, but I might wait if someone has a question.
Yes, it's question time.
Alexa, how did you start thinking about this? You were working on something specific?
No, this is really a deep question that has been in all of my writing, which is nothing feels finished to me unless the voice that's on the page seems to have all of my different parts in it. And so I just was searching for how do I find a way to stand in language with all of my parts. I want to bring all of my parts into the sentence. And I found that question is related to genre, because you go into fiction and these are the conventions of fiction and these are the rules, and that's fine, except I have to leave those three parts at the door. And then I said, okay, well then it's memoir. Well, the conventions of memoir are this, and that means you have to leave these parts out. And so I think that question of bringing all of your parts into your voice on the page is really related to the question of genre. And I just felt sort of like I'd crossed off every genre until I had none left. And then I started finding these writers who are specifically talking about that problem and are moving in between genres. And I thought, if there's a place I can do it, it's here.
Great. What do you guys think? Thoughts, comments? Reactions. Let's have Marianne, then Bobby, and I see Marianne, Bobby, then Kim.
Hi, Alexa. Thank you. That was amazing. I think this has always been true that writers are trying to figure out the difference between the truth and fiction. This is an old, you know, and why we need to, label it at all. You know, is a question of marketing, as you referred to. And then I'm thinking about creative nonfiction, you know, when that term came into being, and how is that different from this? But what I heard you say that seemed helpful to me in understanding it, you know, what was what you just said, all of my different parts, so my different voices and selves, as the author, as well as diversity of narrative approaches. I wrote down that phrase. So the ability to, you know, to toggle between, being a poet, being a prose person, being an academic, being a theory person, you know, historian, myth, all of those disciplines, you know, that we study and are processing are allowed to coexist in this form. Am I summarizing what you said?
Sure, yeah.
And so then we also have this term hybrid. So is that like just a bigger umbrella, would you say?
I don't think I'm gonna give an intelligent answer on that right now, but I haven't thought enough about that word, but I think it can be a helpful word, but again, it means everything and nothing.
Okay.
It means that you can cross between, I think, which is what autofiction is hopefully opening up a space to do.
Thank you, I really appreciate all this. Thank you.
Thank you, Marianne. I appreciate your questions too. I like that diversity of narrative approaches because I'm coming to the MFA program with a project that I didn't know how to name. And so I came just from a brief discussion with Marianne, metafiction. And metafiction, as people were answering beautifully, wonderfully, helpfully in the chat, that it has to do with the writing itself. But what I've been researching since learning that word and how my work might apply to it is that it seems to be more than that. Yet what autofiction seems to be, it blurs that line even more between the reality of the experience with the form itself and the, okay. So I guess because it's new, it's like, how essential is it to categorize my writing, especially when I'm just starting? That's pretty much the question. It's like, yeah, it's a good question.
I think that's a process question, like about your creative process. Kim, you want to speak to that?
I don't understand that answer.
Like,
is the question how important is it to be able to name the genre of your work?
Well, at a certain point in crossing your work over from doing your own work to kind of sharing it with an audience, how one goes about doing that is often about what writers you're inspired by, or what writers your work is in conversation with, or what presses publish the kind of work you're writing. So there's definitely a part in the process where you're gonna confront this, whether it's a totally new question to you, or whether you went into your project being like, I'm writing an autobiography. But I think that is a question that can be addressed. Like, I don't think that needs to be addressed in the earlier phases of generating your work, right? In a way, if you put that question aside, maybe you are mixing things up. Maybe you're gonna have this work that people call it genre defying or something. And I think that's okay, you know? Mm-hmm.
It's like templates. When you're being a little more fluid between narrative and autobiography, it's difficult to know what template to go with. As you were saying, there's truth, and then there's, you know, there's factual truth, provable fact-checky proof, and real proof, intellectual proof, intellectual truth, and emotional truth, and that, you know, so I think it's a really interesting question and a blurring of it. Yeah.
There's been a hand raised for a while up here, and it says Capella.
We're going through the questions.
Yeah. Kim, oh, sorry.
Capella, I made notes. Let's
sorry,
move on.
Judy.
Kim.
Hi, thank you. Well, last semester, or the semester before, I was assigned The Woman Warrior as one of my, my reading assignments. And I remember finishing it and just thinking I had to write some, an analysis. And I thought, I have to read this book at least two or three more times because I don't really understand what she's doing. And I thought, she's doing something amazing and so cool and has gotten me to believe I'm reading this deep truth about her. And yet she's talking about ghosts and she's telling the stories of her female ancestors, which are not directly her stories. So it was so brilliant. And so this lecture has helped me to really understand what she was doing. And it can be so powerful. I think that is, it's just like an amazing book. I have to reread it to fully appreciate
it. Incredible. The level of intentionality and careful craft and the weaving of the different parts and the way that it all becomes a seamless narrative. It's a masterclass.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and it, you walk away with like, wow, that's capital T truth. Like, you know, it's awesome.
Yeah.
So that's it. Thank you.
Storytellers, storytellers exactly that way as well.
Yes, I'm here, and I'm just going to reiterate my request again that we can please take questions from people who raise their hands. It's happened a couple times during this residency, and it is helpful as students if we can do that. We have a lot of people here. So
I wrote down every person that put their hand up to speak and put you on the list. So that's how I've been doing it.
I understand, but I'm reiterating my request from another day. And throughout this residency, I have raised my hands and have been ignored. So I'm just acknowledging that my frustration today, moving forward, can we please try and do that? I did put my question in the chat. So it's my understanding that Lord started a movement, and there has been many authors since then that have followed that model. So I just want to state that, because there was a comment made that that was the only one in existence. And so there's a French boxer who did that and several other authors. So I just wanted to point that out. That is a type of genre.
Thank you very much. I misspoke on that. What I wanted to highlight is a missing connection between autofiction and biomythography that I think should be made. But thank you very much for that correction, and all the writers who have taken up that term, which I'm not very knowledgeable about. I appreciate that, and I will learn more about them.
Yeah, Abby.
Thank you so much, Alexa. I really appreciate the talk. Sorry, I'm running, I'm like sleepy. Okay, my question is, when you're addressing parts of yourself that are marginalized, or, and then the other parts that are, I'm so sorry, I'm slow, you guys. When writing about all the parts of yourself, including those that are marginalized and those that are dominant, you know, whatever, do you have any questions you ask yourself? Kind of central ways of, like, I would love some framework around that. I personally am addressing questions of raise money, you know, all that stuff. I would love some input. I'm trying to do prose poetry, and essay stuff. Thank you.
Yeah, I mean, this is just one person's quick take on a very long, very complex problem. But my personal rule is to get everything onto the page and then go back with an ego filter and try to take out everything that is me advocating for myself, or trying to prove that I'm okay, or stuff like that. Always do a pass for anything that's motivated for those reasons is probably not going to be helpful. My general rule also is to really try and look at, is to try and describe the actual complexity of the way that those things intersect. Because if I try to take on the whole weight of each one of those things and speak for anyone else, it's all going to fall apart. And I'm going to write pages and pages that I'm then going to have to throw away. So it's to be as specific as possible, to look at the intersections rather themselves in the way that they cross each other, and to try and actually describe the true complexity of it at the place where they cross, and then to take out all this stuff that's sort of self-advocacy or ego or self-protection. I'm sure everyone would have a really different answer to that question.
Thank you so much. That's super helpful, highly specific craft input. Just real quick, defending myself, and then there was another little snippet you said, or for the ego check, or like forgiving, there was some other piece, another way you said it. What are you looking for in the ego check? Defending yourself and
just trying to prove that I'm okay.
Proving you're okay. That was it. Ooh, love it. Thank you, Alexa.
Yeah, you also said self-advocacy, which I liked.
Please like me. Please think that I'm an okay person.
Did anyone that had a question that we didn't get to, if you had your hand up and I didn't see it or anything? I don't always keep up with the chat because I'm listening to what people are saying. Hey, Matthew.
Yeah, I guess I have a little question if there's space. I read a story not too long ago called True Story, a Novel. And as you can guess from that title, it's got some auto-fictional elements in it. And what happened with that one is I went into it thinking that it was all fiction, but then, spoiler alert, at the end, one of the characters says basically, okay, so here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to publish a book about what just happened, and I'm going to change my name so that it's a different name than my real name. And I'm going to fictionalize certain elements, but this part is going to be true. And it's like, what? Like, that kind of blew my mind when I read that. So do you think that it's necessary to have, like, to be, like, upfront about a work being auto-fictional? Because I remember I felt a little like, well, you can't do this. I paid for a novel. Like, I didn't know that this was going to, like, can you speak about that at all?
That's a great example of breaking the pact.
Yeah.
Right? You were like, you can't break this pact on me. An interesting thing that came up in a lot of some of the articles that are in the handout is that writers who wrote memoirs, and they, and this happens to so many different writers, but writers who wrote memoirs and then went through the whole experience where the critique was essentially a critique of you as a person and the decisions that you made, a critique of you and your experience. Like, readers are supposed to be critiquing the writing and the book and the form, but what they really end up doing is saying, like, you, how dare you say that? You're a mother, you're not allowed to feel that way about your child, et cetera. And a couple of different writers, one of them is Rachel Cusk, I remember, had this and got sued and went through all the things that go through when you present something as memoir. And they just decided, I can't do this anymore. This is, like, not sustainable because I can't live in the world defending actually my human self when I'm supposed to just be talking about my books. And so they found that you going into this auto-fictional realm or changing, going into third person realm, or that it created a space of some kind of protection for them. And I think, you know, in something like that you just mentioned, the more explicit you are about, like, listen, this is true, but it's not true. Some of this, like the Linda Berry thing, it's fiction, but it's also autobiography. It does create a space where people can't take you to task for a date being wrong or the fact that you have expressed something that they find objectionable. I think that playing with the pact is kind of liberating for you as a writer and might create some space. And also as a reader, it's a really interesting zone for you to see what it was in that made you mad and see if that's a space where that you want to go into as a writer, or if you learn to, like, I don't want to do that as a writer. That's not what I'm here for. It can kind of go either way.
Nicole.
Okay, now this is, now I feel like you're turning, you just flipped the coin. So where's literature in this? Like, when we think about this as a overarching way that we have, that we kind of define ourselves, but not only that, how we are kind of learning about our world and where we are in it, I feel like that really throws in the whole thing, like the sink, the wrenches, the blender, I mean, whatever you want to say. So how do you deal with that in the kind of that larger overarching context? And I know it's happening right now, so it's hard to say what we're going to look at it 100 years from now, but I'm just curious how you see that.
I think I'll just do a quick answer to this in case anyone else wants to, but I think if you just look at the novel, I had a fantastic professor at Mills, Madeline Kahn, who said something to the effect that there was sort of like, there was all this stuff, and that collectively writers were trying to figure out, like, what's the shape of the container that we want to put all this stuff in? And this novel kind of emerged as this container that could hold a bunch of different things that are really hard to name, but it just worked. And in the 18th century. And then since then, that container has been changing shape to hold all the different things that it needs to hold in it. And what it needs to hold in 2021 is not what it needed to hold in 1879. So I think, I don't think literature is in any danger. I think it's always been evolving its shapes and forms to hold what it needed to hold. And let's just see what shapes it turns into. I find it exciting, not scary, personally. Okay, so I'm gonna have you write for 2.5 minutes, and I'll really cut you off on this question. And no one's gonna read this, and we're not gonna read it out. So total freedom, radical wildness. The story the world most wants from me is, go. The story the world most wants to hear from me is. That's it, time. Bring that line to a close. Next question. The essential parts of my voice that need to be on every page are. The essential parts of my voice that need to be on every page are. Okay, stop. Last question. This is just gonna get a minute and a half. We'll have 30 seconds to wrap up. The language doesn't exist for me to write. Blank. Okay, I have to stop you because it's 2 o'clock. I hope you'll keep going with those questions. I hope you'll dive into the handout for a lot of other people's thoughts and brilliant quotes on these topics. And I'm so honored and thankful to have been a part of your week. Thank you, everybody.
Alexa, this was so wonderful, just so expansive and bringing up so many compelling issues and so such a nourishment for our intellectual and literary journey here.